I'm inching along over slick black mud on a trail only as wide as my 2 feet. To my right is a thick wall of undergrowth, including tree ferns like elegant filigreed umbrellas, papery-barked totara, and a kind of white pine called kahikatea. To my left is a drop of about 30 feet or so to the river below, shallow but burbling, its sound reaching me even at this height. I'm in the Mangaukewa Reserve near Te Kuiti in the North Island of New Zealand. It's a stunning, pest-free zone where native birds have returned and green grassy cliffs rise high above the crystal-clear water, studded with overhanging limestone cliffs ideal for climbing. Though my aim today is to keep hiking and get myself to what's been called a cool campsite, one that's deep in the reserve and far off the tourist trails. I'm pretty sure I can physically handle the distance, but just not sure if my daylight will last. And it is hard walking. Slippery, overgrown, thorns in the face, advanced tramping. And it's here that I learn a new bit of terminology. To sidle. Now, I know what the word sidle means. To walk in a kind of furtive or unobtrusive manner, sideways or obliquely. To creep. To slink. Skulk. To prowl. But in the Kiwi context, sidling refers to the act of walking literally on the side of a steep hill, to contour it in such a way, bit by bit, so as not to slide off all the way to the bottom. You're listening to The P-Rag, Unfiltered Adventures of the Blissful Hiker. I'm Allison Young, the Blissful Hiker, sometime professional flutist, sometime voice artist, and full-time pedestrian. Much like the small backpacking essential of the same name, the P-Rag shares the unglamorous but vital truth about empowerment as badass people who really don't need permission to blaze our own trails in this journey we call life. Thanks so much to Leckie Trekking Poles for supporting the P-Rag podcast. If you want to be a blissful hiker, Leckie should be in your hands. Also, Belega, makers of the best blister-resist, non-slouching foot massaging socks for the long haul. I've been working my way down the North Island for a little over a month. The trail notes tell me it's mostly an easy day from Waitomo to Te Kuiti, walking on farmland with just a few slippery patches. I cross over a sturdily built stile, two boards with feet, one taller than the other and set in a cross. I grab the well-used pole, orange paint flaking off, and hoist myself over the fence directly into ankle-deep mud. I'm told an intimidating bull is waiting for me in this field. I can hear some grunting, but I don't see him as I shuffle across the wet grass to an orange triangle on the far fence. It's a slippery banana peel of descent into bush, just as the thunder begins its long, drawn-out rumbling. I cross a bouncy suspension bridge, only wide enough for my feet, and enter the Pehitawa forest, kahikatea pines, some of the tallest in New Zealand. The forest is pitch dark at 8 a.m., rain hitting the canopy like a volley of bullets. At the next ascent, my feet slip back and I hit the mud face first. Why am I doing this again? Only by wedging my feet one after another against the fence posts can I get past that vertical nightmare. And just like that, the track changes to long strides. Wet to the hip, caked with mud, I walk towards a vista of enormous farms in a large bowl surrounded by the bright green hills. It's beautiful, but it's totally confounding. There's no trail, per se, and the orange triangle markers are so widely spaced, I'm pretty much lost. But wait, here's a marker nailed to a tree. I sit down under it just as it begins pouring rain, only slightly protected from the wet. I have a bit of lunch, just as a guy comes out of the mist heading in the opposite direction. Wait, where are you going? He doesn't seem to hear me and keeps moving away, and then is swallowed right up again in the cloud. Did I miss something? Is he actually headed my way? I follow the direction of the marker I'm sitting under up a slick slope of sheep poo that takes me nowhere. And then risk going in the completely opposite direction, the one the other hiker had gone in, just to see where it takes me. Of course, he was right. And I soon meet a farm road just as the sky clears. Being damp does nothing to help my mood, but a stiff breeze dries me out, and the views get a lot better. At the next orange triangle, some saint of a hiker writes exactly which way to go next. Hundreds of sheep are bleating loudly, the lambs being separated from their mamas. I wash off the mud in a tank before heading straight up the hill to Pehitawa Mast. Barangia is completely shrouded in cloud far in the distance. Te Kuiti sprawls out below. It's yet one more straight down mudslide before town, but now that I've washed off, I'm determined not to fall. In town, I buy enough food for the coming 6 days, and I waddle along like a drunk turtle, checking out the exhibit on the town stars Sir Colin and his brother Stanley, both lantern-jawed rugby players of the All Blacks, as well as a massive sculpture of a shearer and his sheep. The trail squeezes past an industrial section, massive vehicles parked behind chain-link fences. These people must be used to our getting lost and have posted signs everywhere ensuring the T.A. Walker finds her way to the Mangokewa Reserve without too many wrong turns. Things start well on a beautiful path, sweeping views of stalactite-filled caverns on brooding cliffs, the bush a hobbit home in a sun shower. A herd of goats, long beards and stinky, rise as one and bound up the hillside. It's late in the day when I decide to keep moving, foregoing a car campsite to find the cool campsite. Almost immediately after crossing a swing bridge, I leave the easy walking behind for greasy sidling that barely offers me purchase. At one point, the trail zigs, but I zag, heading up a nasty herd path that leads to a pasture. Oh, those poor cows. They get to hear multiple expletives as I unwind my gaff. Finally on the right path, I head into a small grove of kahikatea, tall and slender, providing easy walking and a flat spot for my tent. It's the cool campsite. A tiny bench in the river bend, lavished by someone with a table, 3 chairs, a fire pit, a fully inflated inner tube, and a shovel that's been labeled toilet. So far, dig deep. Except for that man coming out of the mist just the right moment and showing me, without even knowing, the right path, I was all alone today. And now, having arrived an hour before sunset, I'm pretty sure I'll be alone tonight, too. Actress Ellen Bernstein said, "What a lovely surprise to finally discover how unlonely being alone can be." In my very first days of solo hiking many years ago, I remember being so afraid of the dark that when I went to sleep, I couldn't close my eyes. Well, I got over that, and naturally, I ensure I'm as safe as I can be by carrying a 2-way GPS with locator beacon and SOS capability. But it's not about getting lost or disappearing. It's more about making my own decisions and trusting myself, enjoying this magical place on my own terms and on my own schedule. The air in this canyon is beginning to chill, and it's time to cuddle into the alley coop. It was a rough day, frustrating and long. But here, dirty and damp, I'm rewarded with the final rays of the sun on virgin forest across the river, its susurrant whisper, a kind of bush versus. You're listening to The P-Rag, Unfiltered Adventures of the Blissful Hiker. I share these stories of walking long-distance trails as a solo, middle-aged female hiker in hopes of empowering you to grab your life and hike your own hike, too. If you want to know more about my hikes, including the gear I carry, check out two new ones, Backcountry Foodie and also a technical pea cloth called Kula Cloth. You can find out more and read the reviews at thepearag.com. It was an awesome night, even if my clothes never quite dried out. I linger for breakfast and use the poop shovel before heading back on the messy nightmare of trail, climbing over fallen trees on steep black clay, maybe a bit less slippery since there was no rain last night. My shoes are starting to shred, and I have a hole in one of my socks. Right now I feel like a star of a reality show, carefully progressing on a crumbling balance beam of a walking trail. When added to the mix are thorns.
Ow!
Big, juicy, grabby, shred-the-shirt-and-draw-blood thorns.
Ow!
And just like that, I'm kicked out on a pasture, where kind souls offer an alternative to this briar patch, in mincing steps on a downed tree over the river. Back in the forest again, but this time of pine and eucalyptus, interspersed with dreadlocked palm, the rain a curtain outside of tall, slender trunks. I crawl through the understory in a tunnel of gorse, another well-intentioned transplant from the old world that found no competition on these islands and steadily spread in an ugly tangle of sharp edges. Well, now the trail is a country road, and I feel like a little wind-up walking machine, the breeze drying my pants and my dampened spirits. I stop a farmer who comes along in a huge truck loaded with sheep. "Your dog," I yell, seeing a wee head pop out from under the wheels. It turns out his animal is snug in this little house under there, right where he belongs. The farmer gets out of his truck and smiles, thanking me anyway, and then he offers me a ride. But I'm happy to keep walking as the rain lets up, and it should be easy now to a place I plan to camp, a small turnout in the road 10 miles or so ahead. As I continue, I feel drips of water on the back of my legs. It's not rain. Oh man, I must have sprung a leak in my water bag. It seems like everything is breaking down. I mentioned my shoes and socks, but also my phone, which I dropped on a rock, causing a spider web of cracks. And my pot cozy is just hanging on with one thin shred of tape. And now my water bag. What's next to fall apart? Me? The trail notes warn me that this road sees very little cars. A hiker underscoring the fact, writing, "Zilch traffic." I need a new water bottle, and I probably should have accepted that ride offered by the farmer with the sheep and his dog. And just then, a truck appears, seemingly out of nowhere. I go right into the center of the road and wave him down. I tell him, "Yes, I'm fine, but I have this predicament with my water bag. Do you happen to have any duct tape with you?" Alan introduces himself and says, well, he doesn't have any in the car, but he's got some at home and just lives right up the road, and he'll head home and grab some, then meet me back here on the road. As he drives off, I follow him slowly, and I think, you know, maybe it might be nicer to camp here than in that bend down the road with no water or really anything. At the mailbox, Alan returns bringing tape, but also an empty 2-liter Coke bottle that might make a more reliable water carrier. I thank him, and then I make the ask. "Alan, is there any chance I can camp on your lawn tonight?" Well, maybe it's because I'm alone, or maybe I don't seem aggressive. I mean, who knows? But Alan says, "Sure, come on." And I pile into his car with my sticks and pack as he drives to a neat little farmhouse, where two lambs press up next to the fence. His wife, Marianne, meets us at the door, not entirely sure about my being there. She asks, "Do you know anything about farm work?" I assure her, I don't, but I'd definitely love to learn. She takes my dirty clothes and stuffs them in the wash, giving me something else to wear, along with a pair of Wellingtons, a warm coat, and work gloves. Alan and I head out on the Polaris, picking up two dogs from the kennel he lovingly calls the hotel. Finn is a Huntaway, a muscular dog with a loud bark and fast running speed. Karen is a Heading or Eye dog, shorter and more at eye level with the sheep, moving them along with a bit less bombast and a bit more finesse. These two dogs absolutely live for farm work, running alongside us as we navigate up and down the huge spread of green hills, corralling the sheep to a new pasture.
I'm lining up. Black Friday sale.
He works so hard without letting up, he finally needs a little cooling off in a nearby trough.
Look out, look out.
My big job out on the farm is simply to open gates, then close them after Alan drives the Polaris through. Alan assures me that I'm helping and earning my stay. I really like him. He's gentle and he answers all my questions, telling me that Merino sheep live on the South Island and that these kind of sheep are raised to eat, not for their wool. But they still need to be sheared, and it's just a break even with hiring shearers and selling the coarse wool. Back at the house, Marianne hands me my clean clothes and tells me to get a shower and to plan to stay on their caravan. She then asks if I eat meat and to plan to eat dinner with them. Alan tells me they've lived here 16 years and are very involved volunteering in their community. Marianne and I connect deeply in a kind of unspoken way. She's exactly my age, but using a walker, and I know she must be suffering from arthritis like me. After dinner, she pulls out a photo album. On one page are pictures showing a helicopter delivering building materials. And on another, there's pictures from the animal cam, including one of two possums deciding which one of them will go first into the trap. I tell Marianne how difficult and frustrating I find the trail, and she tells me that no one is really in charge, so parts like the reserve are not maintained. I also tell her I came to see what would happen to my mind, body, and spirit on a through hike, and I feel like cheating a little asking to stay the night when I really ought to just camp outside. She brushes that concern aside and tells me, "You're still walking every step, and you did spend last night all alone in the bush." I head into the caravan just as the rain returns, pounding hard on the metal roof. I meditate on being alone, how I love it and need it and take pride in it, but also how much I love being brought into this farm family's life, to bask in their kindness and generosity for just a snapshot in time. I know we both feel something, a connectedness for sure, but one with a short shelf life and not meant to be more than it is. But when I leave the next morning to walk towards Puriora and the timber trail, we hug and both have tears in our eyes. Thanks so much to Leckie and Belega for supporting the PRAG podcast. And thanks so much to you, too, for listening. If you enjoy the storytelling, please subscribe. Go ahead and rate the podcast. And better yet, write a review at Apple Podcasts. This really helps others find the podcast. The music you're listening to is me playing my flute from many, many years ago. You can find the recordings on iTunes. Show notes and more about my hikes all over the world, plus photos from the ones I'm describing in the podcast, are at my website, theprag.com.
Okay, those words are Mangalkiwa, Totara, Tekuiti, Pehitawa, Puriora.
That's my pal Neil in Christchurch, who wrote to tell me my Maori pronunciation has been okay, but it could be improved. Just a suggestion, he adds, not a criticism. So here's a try. Puriora. I guess something like that. Well, I mentioned earlier that I'm going to the Timber Trail, and it's in the Puriora Forest. And that's where we're headed next week. It's actually a bike route that runs through one of the finest extant podocarp forests in all of New Zealand. Until then, my friends, kia kaha and happy trails.